This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Speak Now Pro Wrestling. It is Friday night, June 28th, and it's myself, Denise Salcedo, and Robin Lundberg here to talk about WWE SmackDown. And this ended in a bang, Robin, with a bang. Of course, tonight's show emanated from New York. And I think from the way that the show started to the way that the show ended, they pretty much kept the energy going all the way. But Robin, how are you? What'd you think of the show?
I thought it was awesome, Denise. You know, like last week's SmackDown was great. I think this one might have been even better. Might have been even better when you take into account like the energy, the build toward what the Bloodline now is again. Like the Bloodline is back, baby. You know, like it felt like it was lacking a little bit. And then you throw in the surprise appearances from the NBA players, Brunson and Halliburton. On to the top of the show. The way they kicked it off with pure pandemonium. Like, who doesn't like a wrestling show that starts with pure pandemonium?
That's when I knew. The second, I mean, obviously, just like knowing that I had kind of forgotten that the show was in Madison Square Garden for some reason. I just like slipped my mind. And then when the show started, I was like, oh yeah, it's in Madison Square Garden. So today it's going to be good. They're going to put some extra effort into the show, right? Because they're playing like how much millions of dollars, or however much it costs to broadcast from MSG. So you know the show is going to be really good. But the way that the show started, the second that it kind of like hit off with Cody, with Kevin Owens and Randy Orton against the Bloodline, just within that itself, I knew that they kind of set the tone for what was going to be a pretty strong night. So, well, we got so much to get into because we had a confrontation with all of the baby faces from last week going up against the Bloodline, being escorted by the New York Police Department. And at the end of the show, we end up seeing the Bloodline attack Paul Heyman. We also, in between that, got Money in the Bank qualifiers. There's a lot to get into. I want to start things off with a couple of super chats, so let's get to it. We got Kevin Zickler here who says we love Brunson and the Knicks. Thank you so much to Kevin for sending this in. We got Sam Pai Boone who says, will Roman Reigns come back at Money in the Bank next weekend? I still think it's too soon. We'll circle back to that. We got Steven here who says we just turned the page in the Bloodline saga. I think we did, like Robin just said, it went from sort of being at a zero, Robin, to all of a sudden we're riding high at a 10. And speaking of 10, we just got 10 brand new DWO memberships from both Sheldon Jackson and Lab Glass. Thank you guys so much for gifting these memberships to the DWO. You guys are awesome. So let's get right into it. Let's start off with the stuff that everybody wants to talk about. It is the Bloodline. So we kick off the show, Robin, and we have a brawl. This is a brawl. We have a brawl with the baby faces and the heels. And the way that this happened was freaking cool because the Bloodline is out there and it looked like they were trying to do their ceremony at the top of the show. But Kevin Owens, Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton come out freaking pissed. Confront them. They brawl. Kevin Owens does a senton off of the top of where the fans are at. Oh, what is it? Like the staircase, wherever, the balcony. I don't know what you want to call it. Onto a table to, I forgot if it was Tongaloa or Tama Tonga, but to one of them. And it is just melee to the point where the New York Police Department has to come and escort them out of the building. What'd you think of this?
Well, I thought it was awesome. Like I said, you know, kicking it off. The Tongas, though, with the emergence of Fatu, like now they do feel like the same person, right? Like Kylie and Kendall Jenner.
they just morphed into one.
Yeah. But I love the way that they started it that way to, you know, get Randy involved, get Cody involved, get Kevin involved in the show. The Swanton Bomb was perfectly executed. I just love how the RKO is a character in and of itself. You know, you have to do it in front of the crowd as like fan service. And they brought the randos into the ring so that Randy Orton could hit them with the RKO and they could pay that off. But you know what else it did, Denise, is it continued off of last week and made Jacob Fatu into a big deal. You know, last week he was a big deal because he debuted and he ran roughshod over KO, Orton, and Cody. This week, he's not there. And it's like, where's Jacob Fatu? Because he's the heavy right now. He's the one with the juice and the pull. So they were able to give all the baby faces a moment. Then they were able to build the suspense for what was to come later. And Fatu comes out, Samoan werewolf nickname and everything. They're able to elevate Solo through all that process. And they're able to culminate with what happened with Paul Heyman. And not to mention those We Want Roman chants that were there at the beginning. Because I think when Roman Reigns returns, you are in for one of the biggest pops, like a historic pop. And I think the Bloodline story is now officially the greatest story in professional wrestling history. And it just continues to go tonight. That I acknowledge, because I was so happy when Paul Heyman did not acknowledge Solo Sikoa.
Dude, we'll get to that. But damn, what a moment. But there's a lot that you mentioned that I really liked. And there was two things that you said that I think you are 100% spot on. And that is that they built the suspense for Jacob Fatu. I wanted to know, like, where is he? When is he going to come out? He's the special, I don't want to say special attraction, or maybe the special attraction, I don't know. But I felt like I was anticipating him on the television, like already with the buzz, with the debut from last week. He has been set up as somebody that you want to see and that you're excited to see when they come out, right? And the other thing that you mentioned was that it gave the babyfaces this opportunity to sort of look good here, because they came out on top. Even though they were the ones that were escorted out of the building, they still sort of came out on top because they had a lot of the, you know, the bigger, they had the bigger attack on the Bloodline. And for me, what I liked about this though, is because when we were talking about, we've talked a whole lot about Cody Rhodes on this podcast, and we've talked about how, oh, you know, Cody should have more edge, or we want to see Cody get like down and dirty. When Cody Rhodes came out with Kevin Owens and Randy, I kind of felt like the energy in the room was, I'm going to F this guy up. Like, that was the vibe that they all had. So when they all came out together, it kind of made it just more cool. And so it gave the baby faces just this, this presence where all of a sudden, like, they're just not these guys that we like. No, they're ass kickers. They're pissed. They're angry, because yes, baby faces can get angry and mad too. And I loved that presentation of them and how Cody looked with Randy and with KO during this.
I'm with you. Cody's facial expression sold it too. I almost felt like I believed Cody was madder and more fired up in this moment than I did when he was going against AJ. Even when they, yes, you know, even when he had the steps and you're going to have to quit and all that stuff, and he was trying to do the I'm pissed off thing, I felt like he was more pissed off in this moment than I felt that he was going against AJ. And that goes back to the Fatu thing too, because he wasn't there. That's why it was so smart. Not only did it leave you in suspense for when he was going to come, and does it continue to elevate him as a future main eventer possibly, but he doesn't look bad in that moment because he's not there, and you allow the baby faces to go over, because you know the heels are going to have their triumphant moment at the end of the show.
And talk about a very triumphant moment. Let's get to it. The closing of SmackDown. One of, I would say, like, one of the best that we have seen in a while here, because this one, everybody did their parts. And I think we finally got the version of this Bloodline that we have been wanting to see. Because as you know, Robin, and everybody here who listens to the show, one of my biggest complaints has been that they keep saying that the Bloodline, Solo Sikoa's Bloodline, are crazy, that they're madmen, that they're awful, that they're these horrible people, right? That they're terrifying, they're menaces, and they're going to do bad things. Yet we really hadn't seen them be all that bad just yet. Like, we had seen worse from other people or whatever, right? And in this case, it ended up being totally different because we had these, what were they calling it? They were billing it as the bloodline acknowledgement ceremony set for Madison Square Garden. That's how they were billing this on WWE.com. And I at first took this as, oh, they're going to acknowledge Jacob Fatu into the bloodline. That's what I thought this was going to be, and it kind of sensed it like it was. But then it ended up being where all of the guys are telling Solo Sikoa that they love him and they acknowledge him. So then this ended up being primarily about acknowledging Solo Sikoa. And then the moment came where he takes out the red, you know, the tribal chief necklace that Roman Reigns usually wears, and he hands it to Paul Heyman. Now, here is where I want to shout out Paul Heyman. I don't know how this was done. I don't know what he did to prepare for this. I'm starting to think dude did not sleep, because not only was he super, super pale white, abnormally white, he was also bloodshot eyes red. Like, he looked like Justin Timberlake's mugshot. And I wanted to put them side by side, but I ran out of time. But so he literally looks terrified, right? And Solo Sikoa is telling him, like, you need to acknowledge me. And you felt it in the moment that he wasn't going to acknowledge him. And instead, he says, I acknowledge that you will never be my tribal chief, sticking with Roman Reigns. And so, of course, Solo Sikoa and the rest of the bloodline do not like this. And they freaking not only have Jacob Fatu do a splash on him inside the ring, they then drag his body out and freaking powerbomb him in through the table. I mean, this was crazy. This was so crazy, Robin. I don't know, begin wherever you want.
You know, like, we go through weeks and weeks here where we're talking about, oh, it's not really doing it for us. And I think I call them bootleg bloodline. But I also made the point that you can't always have the gas pedal pushed all the way down. Like, there, you have to pace yourself. And all of it came together in the last couple of weeks, right? Because it only takes a moment. And I think the presence of Fatu elevates Solo because it now makes the whole group more powerful. And then therefore Solo doesn't look like he's equal with the Tongas. And that elevates him. You also have been building this tension with Paul Heyman and Solo for weeks and weeks and weeks. And Heyman has done an awesome job selling that. What was the PLE where he was left in the ring, where he was wondering what was going on? Like, you could see, I think you and I did Bust It Open that morning. Right before, it was a Backlash?
Was it Backlash?
Yeah, I think it was Backlash. Yeah, and you saw Paul Heyman, like, what am I gonna, you know, like, all of that was building toward this. And then the, whatever you call the neckwear, that color, it just, like, it evoked all the sensory overload in my mind. I'm like, is it gonna hit? Is the music gonna hit? Is Roman's music gonna hit?
I thought he was gonna say, I acknowledge Roman Reigns. That's what I thought for a second.
And I was getting, so I was like tense. And I was anticipating that, but the way it ended worked out great, not only because I popped off the couch, like, for real, like, yeah, when he didn't acknowledge Solo Sikoa. And it allows the bloodline to look even stronger. Paul Heyman does a great job. And the greatest story in the history of wrestling. Bloodline's the greatest story in the history of wrestling. And I'm not so far off from calling Roman Reigns the GOAT. Like, I cannot wait for this man to return. I cannot wait to throw my ones in the air. I cannot wait to hear that dramatic ass music when it first hits before it comes in with the banger ass theme. Like, it was beautiful, Denise. It was beautiful the way they did it. The energy was there, and it really just set the cycle in motion towards SummerSlam.
And the way that Paul Heyman sold all of that, man, from the reactions to just, like, even when he took the splash, he had this, if you go back and you watch it, go and please look specifically at Paul's face when he takes the splash, because there's a moment where it literally looks like his guts are about to come out of him. Like, that was his reaction to that. Now, I do want to go to this. I want to go back to the super chat from Sam Pai Boom, because he had asked, will Roman Reigns come back at Money in the Bank next weekend? As much as I want to see Roman Reigns come back, right? Everybody wants to see Roman Reigns come back. I almost want to continue seeing what more chaos can the bloodline instill right now, because now that they have Jacob Fatu, you have the power, you have the advantage to really start to build them up as the faction that that they had been claiming that they were all along. So I almost want to hold off just a little bit longer so that when Roman Reigns comes back, it's like, oh shit, like this is now, we're maximizing whatever reaction you can possibly get. So I do think that they can let this breathe just a little bit more until Roman comes back. So are you expecting him Money in the Bank closer to SummerSlam?
I don't think Money in the Bank makes sense because there's no motivation for him. Like, why is he coming to help Cody and Randy and KO? That doesn't make sense, right? Like, I mean, obviously, he and Cody had a thing. He and KO had a thing. There's no motivation for, it would have made sense for him to come out and save Paul Heyman. Now, that's not to say that's what should have happened. It worked great the way it did. But something like that, right? Like, that, I think it needs to be the triumphant moment where you're really waiting for Roman to come and play the hero now. Because I think that's where we're headed with Roman, is babyface Roman Reigns. But no, I don't think it happens at Money in the Bank because of the structure of that match. I think it happens sometime between then and SummerSlam, if not at SummerSlam.
So at Money in the Bank, we are going to have the six-man tag I'm not even sure who's going to be the three guys in this match against Cody, Randy, and KO, because you have Solo, Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, and Jacob Fatu. So it's going to be three of them. I'm not sure which three exactly. They haven't necessarily specified here. So it does, like you mentioned, Roman Reigns doesn't necessarily have a specific reason at that moment. Of course, he's going to want to get revenge for what they did to his wise man, Paul Heyman. But again, I don't think that it fits into Money in the Bank quite yet. And for that also reason that you mentioned. But I'm looking at this though, and I'm thinking, okay, so what do you do here at Money in the Bank? Do you have the baby faces go over, or do you have the heels go over in this scenario? Because I almost want the heels to go over.
I think they have to after this, right? Like, I think they have, or else you're sort of squandering it, unless they just, brutalize them. Unless, Tama Tonga takes the pin or whatever, and then Solo and Fatu brutalize them. But I think you go the other way. I think you have the Bloodline win the match fairly cleanly, in Bloodline fashion. Obviously, there'll be shenanigans involved, but in a way where there's somebody's in the middle of the ring, one, two, three. And I think that's the best direction they can go right now. And Fatu has to be involved in that match, right? Like, I would be
disappointed if he wasn't involved in this match.
Yeah, I think you could hold Solo out if you wanted. Solo could be like, I'm the boss, I'm orchestrating things. But Fatu has to be in the match because we're all waiting to see that. We've seen glimpses of it, obviously, in these segments, but in an elongated presentation in the ring.
Well, like even today, all the attacks that were done on Paul Heyman was primarily from Jacob Fatu. He was the one, he was the muscle, he was the one implementing the pain. So it does feel like now he is the attraction of this Bloodline. And it's simple things too. I noticed that there's little things that he did differently aside from just the big moves and all of that, right? But even just when they were having them talk to the camera and you had Solo there saying everything that he was saying, and then you had, both Tongas on the side, and then on the back, the whole time Jacob Fatu was walking back and forth, and he was like making the faces, right? Like, he seemed like he was already ready to unleash. So at no point did his state ever go down. Like, he was always at a 10 the whole entire time, and I like that. And it's little things like that that I think just go over a little bit more with the audience.
Yeah, I mean, again, and then, the hold, the wait, and here's the introduction. Here he is. He's just, they've got it with him right now. And I'm not so sure he's not main event in pay-per-views, like I said, or PLEs in the near future. I mean, I think he has that sort of gravitas at the moment. And we'll see how long it lasts. Sometimes we've seen it before where guys come in, they're hyped at the beginning, and a year from then, it's not the same. But right now, he's got it. And I think his introduction juiced up the Bloodline storyline, and it activated all of the subtext that was already laid down, which Paul Heyman did a masterful job of, and really he had to be the one that paid it off, because it was like little moments on SmackDown week after week where Heyman was like, week after week, and it was just that little bit that was all building towards this. So you have to give WWE credit, Triple H, and all, they do long-term storytelling. Right. Like, when you're disappointed in the moment, But not every episode of a show is the best episode of the show. Or else, you know, like, you would never talk about the best episode of the show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's my question to you now. Paul Heyman's going to be out for a while. When does he return? Does he just, like, when he returns, does he return with Roman Reigns?
Well, it looked like he needed to sleep for about 3 weeks, so...
Yeah, he did. That's what I'm telling you. Like, he grew the, by the way, like, he also grew the facial hair. Like, it wasn't just the bloodshot eyes. He had the facial hair that was all scraggly, but he just looked like unhealthy. He looked unhealthy. I'm like, you need to eat some vegetables. You need to drink some water. You need something, because he looked so freaking stressed out. I'm going to pull up the picture in just a second, but we got Mr. Acosta here who says, this was my type of shit. What a great fun show. Yeah. And it shows like these, like this, leave you with this energy. Like, I'm excited now. Sorry, Paul Heyman. I know you're probably dead right now, but I am excited after what went down. We got Gabriel Salazar here who says, who else looks at security wondering who will be the next superstar? That Roman pop will be huge when he comes back. I look at security. I hate when I look at security and I notice that they're not doing a good job. I like when security does a good job, when they legitimately look like they're going, like they legitimately look like they're trying to solve a problem instead of just being like, oh, I was told to stand here and do this. And then I almost also, I forgot to mention this, Robin, I kind of wanted the NYPD or the police department, whatever. I wanted them to actually take them out, like take out Cody Rhodes, take out Kevin Owens and Randy, like make it physical. Come on. Like we know how it is. Like, it's not, they're not just going to be like walking you like, oh yeah, go outside. Like, if you came in, we're going to actually take you out.
Yeah. Well, the first guy, I mean, look, you could tell some were commissioned to just eat an RKO. And I don't know if he was the security or part of the officiating. He looked like a wrestler, actually. I'm sure somebody will reference that and tell me who that was. But the first guy that came in looked like a wrestler.
Oh, who, I didn't notice him.
Yeah, yeah. The one that ate the first RKO. And then somebody else ate another RKO. But that's what the security was, I think, partially there for. And to just, you know, up the ante a little bit of the chaos. But
I just wanted someone to get arrested the way that Stone Cold Steve Austin would get arrested, and he would be like, son of a bitch. Like, come on, like, that's iconic. And it would have been kind of cool to see them do it with these guys. I know it's different because they're totally different characters than Stone Cold Steve Austin, but the nostalgia in me kind of wanted to see the 2024 version of it.
But, you know, you said you liked Cody's facial expression and the way he sold it, right? And so did I. I think you run the risk of it going awry if you have Cody Rhodes trying to pull off that Stone Cold homage.
Right. Like, that's why I knew they didn't do it. Like, I knew why they didn't do it, but I still wanted it. But here, check it out. This is the photo of Paul Heyman. Am I lying? This is literally what Justin Timberlake looked like in his mugshot.
I mean, yeah. What did they say about the cop who got Justin Timberlake? They said he didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman... I gotta say, Justin looked better than Paul Heyman does right there.
Okay, let's put it to the test. Hold on, give me a second. I'm uploading the freaking picture. Okay, no, you know, have you been seeing the memes, the world tour memes?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, hold on. Why is this failing me? Everybody just take a second and enjoy Paul Heyman's face while I get this damn picture up.
I mean, you know, he looks like bird flu.
Let's vote. I'm going to be looking at the chat. All right, guys. Who looked worse? Paul Heyman or Justin Timberlake?
Justin Timberlake just looks like he has no soul. It looks like the soul has left his body. Paul Heyman looks like he's on the verge of death. And I hope he's actually okay.
Oh, man. I can't. I'm sorry, it's killing me right now.
We are not bringing sexy back with those shots. Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh my God, Paul looks worse. That's what I'm saying. Give the man kudos. How did he do it? How did he look worse? Look, everybody's bringing it up. How did this happen? What did he do to make himself look worse? Oh man, I'm dying right now. All right, let's see. Where is, nope. Where is it? Oh, there you go. All right, let's continue on with these super chats that we're getting in here and see what the people thought about all of this. This is from Ice-T. He says, people say the Bloodline has been cinematic. Nah, it's pro wrestling Tolstoy, a literally epic saga on par with War and Peace, the Polynesian Wars. Thank you for the description of the Bloodline. We got Lab Glass here who says Solo's Bloodline versus Paul Heyman guys, Roman, Brock, CM Punk, and Curtis Axel. Could you, I mean, we did have that CM Punk Bloodline confrontation. What was it, last week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, I've talked about it. I think of Roman, Jay, Jimmy, and Sammy. But that does leave one spot, right? Like if you're going with Solo, Fatu, Tongas, and then maybe eventually The Rock, like who could be that if it was Punk? Brock, man, that I don't want to delve into the we all know the qualifiers with Brock, but let's assume everything was good. I would love to hear Brock's music and see him return in some sort of epic fashion like that, but you know, qualifiers involved.
We got Blake here who says, can we say Tiffy in the bank yet? We'll talk about that in a second, but just a spoiler, I'm gonna say yes. Tiffany Stratton, she's getting, she did the, you know, she signaled for the belt. I'm taking that as a, I'm cashing that in right there.
I've been saying her for a minute, ever since the Australia show. I thought like she was destined. It's perfect for her character and everything she does, either, you know, her or Chelsea Green type of character. But Tiffany Stratton with that briefcase and the threat of always trying to cash it in really works for her. And that moonsault really is the prettiest moonsault ever, by the way. Like when she hits that perfectly and cleanly.
All the time, literally. Okay, by the way, guys, I just tweeted the comparison shot of Paul Heyman and Justin Timberlake. I was like, I got to get this tweet out before somebody else does. All right, we got Jana here who says, I don't want to see Cody versus Roman 3 unless Cody is a heel. They're both baby faces now, so my interest isn't there. Got to shake up the dynamics. I feel like if they do run this match again, they are for sure changing the dynamics of who's a heel and who's a baby face, because right now, Roman ain't even there, but already with the story and the fan reaction, he is coming back as a baby face.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think you still have Rock and Cody in the tuck, because that was built so much from the storyline and everything. So there's a lot of different ways they could go, and they've got those two mega powerful matches that don't involve Roman rematching with Cody, which eventually I think we'll see again. I mean, those two have great chemistry, but you have Rock and Cody and you have Rock and Roman. So what if Rock is the one who takes the belt off Cody? And then it's Roman and Rock at WrestleMania, and that's how Roman gets it back.
Oh, my God. I don't know. 2024 with Rock as champion?
I mean, it was 2023 was damn good with Rock. It ain't been that long.
I don't know. I can't say yes. I'm not jumping at the idea. But if it did happen, think about the reactions and the conversations and the buzz surrounding that. But I don't know. I'm not jumping for joy just yet on that one. But I am jumping for joy to see whenever they decide to reveal. I hope that they do reveal that The Rock is the mastermind, like you said, behind the Solo Sikoa's Bloodline. All right, we got 89 J Stubbs who says, I think Solo has to pin Cody to set up the SummerSlam match. Oh, I don't want to see Solo Sikoa pin Cody Rhodes. No, I'm sorry. I just don't buy Solo Sikoa yet.
You know, he's been elevated, and I use my kids as reference points all the time, Denise, because you got to remember the WWE audience, right? Like it's a lot of, and my youngest, Big Ro, Rohan, he's 3 years old. He's always running around the house going, Solo! And then like hitting somebody. So I wonder if, you know, maybe that it's working a little bit because of that. And I think Solo, right post-WrestleMania, felt way more important than he did in however many months it was prior. Then it sort of got stale. Now I think they're back to where they were right post-WrestleMania, where Solo feels like elevated and important again, in large part due to Fatu and in large part due to Paul Heyman. But I do think, you know, when I see my kids react, like my son Raj is into Jey Uso. Yeet everything around the house. You want a sandwich, yeet. You know, like that's the way it goes. That's anything that's in the affirmative. And my youngest boy Rohan is always, where's Solo? Solo! You know? And I also got hit with a Samoan spike.
You got Samoan spiked? That's terrible.
BJ's whole food.
Little kids be rough, man. It's not like he's going to go all soft on you. He's going to go full throttle, man, with that thumb.
Just because they're break his thumb on my larynx.
Oh man, no, little kids be scary, man. I don't play fight with little kids, man, because they be putting their full strength on you. But anyways, I do not want to see Solo Sikoa pin Cody Rhodes. I'm just not there yet. As of this moment, no. All right, we got Mike Parker here who says, Paul is a master, not just a great manager, but one of the greatest performers of all time. There's a reason he has been around for almost 40 years and done it all. Chef's kiss. Well, Mike, all I can say to this super chat is I do agree with your comments here.
Yeah, the only person who belongs in the conversation with Paul Heyman is Bobby the Brain Heenan. Like, it's those two. You know, Bobby the Brain would bring out Andre the Giant, and he was just hilarious in commentary. If you ever go back and watch, like, the Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty stuff, like, there's just, you know, so many great lines that he's had over the years. He's the only person who I would put in the same sentence as Paul Heyman.
Well, since you kind of mentioned a little bit of nostalgia, really quickly before I continue on, starting July 1st, I'm going to be dropping daily videos here on the channel. It's a lot, but I'm going to be dropping daily reviews of each and every single SummerSlam ever. So keep an eye out. They're going to be dropping from July 1st through July 31st, every single day at the exact same time. So that'll start July 1st. All right, we got Anthony Giuliano here who says, I'm disappointed they didn't give Kayla Braxton a farewell on her final show tonight and only had one segment in the beginning of the show. So as most of you guys know, Kayla Braxton revealed on her social media that she is leaving WWE. From the sounds of it, she's already got something else lined up. I don't think she's going to AEW, especially with some of the comments that she made about she wouldn't leave WWE to go to AEW. And so I don't think she's going to AEW. And so she had said that today would be her last show. And we had a quick backstage segment where she was following out Cody and all those guys, trying to get a word with them backstage. And that was the only appearance that they had her do. So I was expecting a little, I thought she was going to come out on the show later on and have like a last final moment. But I guess they didn't.
I don't think there was room for it on the show. No offense. Like, you know, this show, the way it started.
Because they had Byron Saxton. Interview. Who did he interview? He had an interview, and they could have filled her in for. They could have put her in that one.
I suppose, but you know, like generally, that also is going to, if you're making notice of it, maybe pull people out for a second. You got to remember they also had the package for Sika too in this episode.
Which very nice package.
Very nice package, and obviously, RIP to another tribal chief. And so I guess. I hope she does well. No ill will toward her whatsoever. I hope she flourishes in her career, but I didn't think it was particularly necessary, and it wasn't something that I missed in the moment, I guess.
Yeah, I was expecting it. I was expecting them to have like a little, I don't know, maybe even her and Paul Heyman to have one final mm-hmm. Bowman backstage, anything really. I did expect something a little bit more there, but we got Denisha Lane here, who's been a member of the DWO for 4 months, says, hey Denise, 4 months SmackDown was really good. Yes, 4 months of being in the DWO and thought SmackDown was good, and I second that. Thank you so much, Denisha Lane. We got Sheldon Jackson here, who says, Paul looked like he had been tortured by listening to all of Taylor songs over and over. Poor guy needs Roman and a massive song and a massive hug. Sheldon, you're still on the list. You haven't gotten off the list, but yes, he does need a hug and some water. Ice Tea, he here says, cry me a river, Justin and Paul, better than Perry. Oh man. All right, so let's continue on here. And I want to go ahead and get into the Money in the Bank stuff, because that was also a really big part of the show. And wow, now that I think about it, that's really the only other topic to get into, because everything else was bloodline related and we already covered that. And the other three matches that we saw on the show were all about Money in the Bank. So let's go ahead and get into the women's qualifiers. Actually, first we'll get into the super chat. This one's from Roberto, who says, Denise, you said you're watching all the SummerSlams. I did that in 2020, and damn, Demolition are boring. All they do is punch, kick, body slam.
I don't remember Demolition matches, but I remember loving them as a kid. Axe Smash, eventually Crush. We're Demolition, walking disaster. You know, they were kind of, you know, in retrospect, a Road Warriors ripoff, right? Like, I think. But I loved them at the time. So I look fondly back on Axe and Smash.
There's a lot of people that are punch, kick, body slam. A bunch. And there were some that were very hard to get through. And there were some that I had the best time watching. And there were some where I just thought, why the hell did I do this? Me and my dumbass ideas, honestly. But keep an eye out for those shows. All right. Now, the Money in the Bank topic. Here we go. Do you want to start with the men? You want to start with the women? Where do you want to go here?
I mean, whatever way you want it. The men, in a sense, I mean, had the, you know, the big pop at Madison Square Garden with all the other extracurricular stuff.
Let's start with the guys then. All right. So we had the LA Knight, not the LA Knight, but we had the triple threat here with LA Knight versus Logan Paul versus Santos Escobar, with the winner of that qualifying into the men's Money in the Bank. So I'm going to be real with you and to everybody here. I don't know much about the New York Knicks or anything that we saw here. So, Robin, can you please tell the people what happened here with the basketball players that was one that was already ringside and one that Logan Paul brought out? Because I was clueless.
As you're going back and watching the old SummerSlams, we got to go back to the 90s first, Denise. When you go back to the 90s, there was a rivalry between the Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks. And Reggie Miller famously was on the Pacers at the time. He would jaw with Spike Lee, known Knicks supporter, who was always sitting courtside. And he famously did this in one of the, you know, victories for the Pacers over the Knicks. But those teams met a lot in the 90s. This year, those two teams met in the playoffs. And the star point guard for the Indiana Pacers is Tyrese Halliburton, who was there and a huge wrestling fan. The star point guard for the New York Knicks is Jalen Brunson, who was there in Madison Square Garden. So Logan Paul pulls the ultimate heel move in bringing out Tyrese Halliburton, who eliminated the Knicks from the playoffs and then wore a Reggie Miller t-shirt like this in the post-game press conference right after the Pacers eliminated the Knicks. They also have the Halliburton, the 317 shirts on sale on the WWE shop because he's such a renowned fan. I mean, he was asking questions at a press conference not that long ago. You know, he's a real fan. So when they're at Indianapolis, you know, he'll 100% be there. If they can get Caitlin Clark to show up at the same time she plays in Indiana, that would be a big thing. And then obviously on the other side, you're going against the Knicks crowd by bringing out Halliburton, perfect Logan Paul kind of move. And then Jalen Brunson gets the hero moment with LA Knight in front of the home fans and the chair. That's the summation for you.
I love that. I mean, I knew they had heat. I can tell based off of what we're watching, but I'm like, I don't know what the heat is exactly. So thank you so much for telling us what's going on for those that do not know. I appreciate that a whole lot. All right. So in this match, I will say this, though, is it looked very fun, but it was hard to follow. And the reason for that was that when Logan Paul came out, Fox was just going crazy, man. They were just blacking out the screen nonstop. At one point, I think it was out for like 25 seconds, and we're just sitting there watching, and nothing is happening. And then, so finally, you know, that stops, right? And I think people were saying that people were flipping off Logan Paul, and that's part of the reason why the screen went black, because I know people from other places that were tweeting me that didn't have that because they're watching on different services. They were able to watch everything perfectly fine, right? But then when the match was happening, again, because people were cursing, they were chanting stuff, they were muting the broadcast. But it felt like they were muting so much. And that was kind of taking you away from it. So every time I was really getting into the match because it was good and the crowd had such good energy, but they kept muting it. So I was frustrated already from the blackouts, from the muting, to the point where I was like, I'm done. I'm enjoying this for what it is, but you're making the experience hard to watch.
It's unbearable. Like, there's got to be a better way around it, because it happened for me a bunch. Not just in that segment, the most in that segment, but throughout the show. You can't change the camera angle. You can't drop the audio feed. Come on. I mean,
it happened with the women's match with Nia was out there. It happened also with the oh, I was so pissed. It also happened during the Bloodline stuff. And at one point, I'm thinking, I knew the part where they were chanting holy shit. I'm like, okay, fine, I get it. They mute it, whatever. But the screen blacked out when everybody threw up the ones. And I started thinking, are they confusing the ones with middle fingers? Like, what is happening here? There's no, it didn't seem like there was a reason for them to black out the screen during that time.
No, and it makes you think, I thought my power went, or, well, I mean, I know I had lights, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I thought my cable went out. Or something like that. It was problematic. They can't keep happening. When are they switching networks?
That's at the end of the year. I think it's in November or October. I forget. I had just done a video about it and I completely forgot now. But they both Raw and SmackDown are going to be on USA at the end of the year.
I don't understand. Like, we're big boys and girls. We could handle it.
I was thinking too. And I was afraid. I thought, oh, people are going to get offended if I say, and I get it because of advertisers and things like that. And I figured people are going to get offended if I say it's the F word, grow up. We all say it. It's all over the freaking planet.
Wouldn't Fox be the network that would like be railing against being too PC anyway?
Right? No. And they were like, nope, you can't. This one looks like a middle finger. Let's black out the screen. Someone was having a lot of fun with that freaking button. They were trigger happy.
Yeah, man, it ruins the viewing experience. It's not like it's abrasive.
You're right. Exactly. I agree. LA Knight gets the victory. He is in the Money in the Bank, and he now joins Chad Gable, Carmelo Hayes, Jey Uso, and Andrade. So that is 5 spots taken up. We still got 1 spot to fill. Where are you at here with the men's? Has your opinion changed in terms of who you think is winning this and who's not winning this?
I thought it was interesting that Knight, you know, like I thought Escobar would be more likely just because of the Logan Paul LA Knight dynamic that's going on there. You know, Jey Uso, it's on the note. Like, I've thought for the longest time, Jey Uso and Tiffany Stratton. I feel like in one of these matches, I'm going to get hit with the curveball, and it's not going to be that way. And maybe it's poor Jey, because it just, like, they're putting it in front of our faces too much with the advertising.
And last year, LA Knight was the one that a lot of people thought was going to win, and then he didn't. And then this year, I feel like last year they wanted him to win more than probably this year, because this year I don't feel like people are talking about it as much.
What if it's LA Knight and Jey Uso battling for the briefcase? Like, I know they're both baby faces, right? But the anticipation of who might grab it and pull it down just so people could.
Who would you prefer? Oh. I would prefer Jey Uso.
I think I would prefer Jey Uso too, but.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to go with LA Knight.
No, but. I mean, just even walking around the halls in Philadelphia at Lincoln Financial Field, like, you can't go anywhere without hearing, yeah, you know?
What do you prefer to chant? Yeah or yeah?
Yeah. Oh, that's happening. We just
right. Yeah.
They're going to stand on top of the ladder. They're going to be punching each other back and forth, and the crowd's going to be saying, yeah, yeet, yeah.
They have to.
Yeet. That's happening, 100%. That's money.
They have to. Yes, they have to. The second you said it, I was like, I see the vision. Yes. Oh, my God. That's going to be fun. That's going to be very, very fun. All right. So, I mean, just based off of what we have right now, I'm still also leaning towards Jey Uso. And I keep saying the same thing. I really do think they want to just put out those yeet money in the bank briefcases. They want to make some money. And you're going to make some money with some yeet. You don't think your son would want a yeet money in the bank briefcase?
Oh, yeah. 1,000% would want. I mean, he's got the yeet shirt already. I mean, again, he writes yeet on the refrigerator. He says yeet to answer in the affirmative. We are, you know, maybe just rest in yeet, he'll say at my funeral.
Love you, Dad. Yeet.
I mean, that's why I do the yeet send-off, you know, because he loves Jey Uso. So.
Oh, that's terrible. Love you, Dad. Yeet. I would die.
I'd already be dead, so I couldn't die. Unless I could undertake your sit-up or something. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be terrifying. Or all of a sudden your hand comes to help. Oh, my God. Or we hear you from down below. Yeah.
Yeah. With everybody saying, Dad's dead. Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible. Oh man. All right. So let's see what people here are saying. We got some super chats here. This one was from, oh, we got a couple. Let's see. This one's from Brian G. Myrtle Beach. Didn't write anything, but thank you so much for sending in the super chat. Really goes a long way. We got Anthony Giuliano here who says, I agree. My TV was doing it the same way. It was annoying. Oh, I was talking so much smack to Fox inside my head. I was like, this never works. You know me. We got Injured Cool here who says, gonna be wild when Wyatt's and Punk show up with Money in the Bank. What's BL? What's BL? Bloodline. Okay, so it's gonna be wild when Bloodline, Wyatt's, and Punk show up at Money in the Bank. Okay, that's what I'm guessing. That is true. I'm expecting CM Punk to come out and cost Drew. The Wyatt's got to do something because they're, you know, doing all this crazy stuff on the show. And then the Bloodline, well, with their whole shenanigans that are going down with Cody and KO and Randy. So, yeah, it's going to be a star-packed show. That's for sure. We got Mike Parker here who says, just a quick comment regarding Demolition and that era. Different time, WWF was more character-driven than match quality for the most part. Looking forward to your take on the early Summer Slams. Oh, I'm so ready for it. So far right now, today So I'm on 1993. That's the one I need to watch next. And I've done two videos so far. The first one covers 1988 to 1990. And the second one is 1991 and 1992. So that's where I'm at right now in terms of progress.
Well, that's probably an interesting period. I mean, you're probably seeing some like Doink the Clowns and Duke the Dumpster Drosies around that time, no?
So far they're not. So, I mean, they're not on the actual show.
Yeah.
The only one I legitimately did struggle with a little bit was 1988. That one I did struggle with. But the other ones, I felt like each year that went on, it just got better and better in little ways. So anyways, I guess I won't spoil the rest of my thoughts there. And I'll let you guys find out what I thought when I put those videos out there. But I will say, though, there's part of me that's like, in the beginning, when I was watching 1988, I started to kind of regret it a little bit. But then I was like, oh, wow, you issued a challenge. Now you have to deliver and complete it.
Well, you almost get a 95, which is the Shawn Razor ladder match rematch, which I could argue is better than the first one. So you're getting close to that.
I'm excited. We got Alvin White Jr. here, who's been a DWO member for 3 months. Says, when does Jimmy come back? Does he wait for Roman? That's right. He's been out since when? Why am I blanking on how long he's been gone for?
He's been out since right after WrestleMania. I mean, like, I don't
even remember. Backlash?
I don't remember him after WrestleMania. Like, to be honest, after that match, they needed to go away to come back and
how sad
be fumigated from that. But yo, it's gonna hit like crack though. It's gonna hit like crack when Jimmy comes back and reunites with Jay, and then when Sammy comes back and reunites with Jay and Jimmy, all with Roman. I'm gonna be so giddy. Like, I'm fanboying right now. Like, I did, like, when Paul didn't acknowledge Solo, I knew it. We're heading towards all that. And it really just does emphasize how awesome the Bloodline story has been and how long it's been going on. Because, you know, we've been attached to these characters and this overall narrative for going on 5 years now.
Thank you to 2011 Cards fan who says Jimmy was on the SmackDown after Mania.
So
wasn't he getting yelled at? Oh, did he get kicked out? He got kicked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
God, I feel so bad. I don't remember. I'm like blanking. I'm like trying to put the pieces together. I'm like, what did happen to Jimmy? All right. So whenever he comes back, we'll figure that out. And they still have to mend things with him and Jay. That still hasn't been mended. So that still needs to happen. All right.
Yeah, they're going to be great.
Okay, thank you. Matt Leeds Wrestling reminds us, right after Solo kicked him out of the Bloodline. Thank you. I was trying to remember. I was like, why the hell am I blanking on what the hell happened here? All right, so I think at some point we're going to have to go back and do like a whole Bloodline trivia of everything that's just happened throughout the years with the Bloodline. See how much you remember in 5 years.
You could put the questions on like the Bloodline chart, like in the same
graphic. Oh, yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. That's very clever. If I do that, I'm going to have to steal that idea, Robin.
It is your eye. I just gave it to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right. So let's go ahead and get into the women's Money in the Bank scenario because there's a lot happening here. So just to summarize, we had two women's qualifier matches. The first one, we saw Tiffany Stratton defeat Candice LeRae and Jade Cargill to qualify. The second one, we saw Indy Hartwell We saw Naomi defeat Blair Davenport and Indy Hartwell to qualify. So what that means is that the Women's Money in the Bank now features Tiffany Stratton, Chelsea Green, Io Sky, and Lyra Valkyria. There's still one more spot to fill. So I want to start off with the first one that we saw there, because Indy Hartwell, because her friend Candice LeRae was out there, she decided to go out and attack Jade Cargill and sort of get rid of her in this scenario. And so that allowed Tiffany Stratton to get the victory. What did you think of this? Because part of me really wasn't too crazy about that.
Yeah, Jade came to get her licks back, right? Like it sort of came out of nowhere. Maybe they're, you know, what are they doing with Jade and Bianca before they get to Jade and Bianca? I guess is what we're kind of figuring out right now. And maybe that, you know, this is part of the filler of that, or the build to that, because we all know that's eventually coming, but we got to get there and you got to plant the seeds and everything in between. But yeah, it felt a little random and you know, just something to do to get Jade involved, really.
Yeah, because I still don't feel like we finished off Jade and Nia Jax either. Like, that started and then nothing really came off of that. And I also kind of feel like they weren't, I don't know for sure, but it doesn't really feel like Jade and Bianca were meant to not still be tag team champions at this point. Like, I feel that the title change, it almost feels like it was a last minute decision. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I guess we'll ever find out. But I just feel like it felt like they should still be champions right now, because like you said, what else are you going to do until we finally get to Jade and Bianca?
Yeah, I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe there was a bit of an ad lib pulled off there, or, you know, a pivot pulled off there. Obviously, you know, Unholy Union in there, they had personal issues that had transpired during that time period. So maybe there was a little bit of a, something nice to do, perhaps. I don't know. But it does feel a bit rudderless, a bit directionless. And yeah, I almost forgot about the Nia Jax, because I was looking forward.
Jade and Nia. Yeah, same. And nothing ever really came of that. And I feel like they had set it up so nicely for there to be a conclusion to that story. And it almost feels like it's them basically trying to protect all these people. So that's why you're not seeing these people touch, because you're protecting Nia, you're protecting Jade, you're protecting Bianca, you're protecting all of these people. So then that's why it almost feels like these stories are not actually culminating to anything.
And Jade's still in that part of her development, and her persona is married to it, where she has to look strong, right? Like, it's not, Bianca has the pedigree and has done it. And of course you have to protect her, but Jade almost like can't even be injured. Can't even be taken to the mat, those type of things. So she's really extra protected. And we haven't really seen her either, you know, get the long leash as of yet. So when you're combining those two things, where they feel she is in her development. And I thought people were unfair to her, by the way, for the Clash of the Castle spot. Like, everybody said that was a botch. That's not a botch to me. That's not what a botch is to me. She slipped. You know, like, in the midst of doing any athletic event or activity, you could slip and fall. That is I don't have to suspend my disbelief to see that, you know, you slipped and fell. A botch to me is when you screw up the move or take me out of the storyline in a
I felt bad for Jade, because I knew that she was just going to get judged differently than if anybody else. I knew she was going to get judged worse. And that's why I felt bad for Jade in that moment. So, I mean, because like, even then, like, what was the reaction for when Damian Priest's foot got stuck on the ropes? Was it as nasty as how it was for Jade?
No, I didn't really get to see. And Drew helped him out too by coming and, like, you know, hitting him out of the ropes and, you know, getting involved there. But no, it wasn't. And it was very close to the same thing, right? Like, you know,
It was worse, because he could have gotten hurt even worse than Jade slipping.
Yeah, that's the Jade thing. It's purely AEW, WWE, right? Like, it's that tribalistic part faction of people who are online and are typing away. But that to me was nothing. But with that said, she hasn't yet gotten to show what she's capable of or not in a lengthy solo match. And at the same time, it makes sense to protect her in that way because she, I mean, the reason her character is that is because she is that, right? You see her come out like, who could take on this chick? You know, she's a beast. She's a monster. She's a real life superhero. So it's hard to book that. You know, that's a little bit difficult because you can't put her against somebody and go the distance because maybe she's not ready yet. And two, even if she was ready yet, you don't want her to look vulnerable unless she's going up against somebody that is way up here.
Yeah, it's almost like that's the way you package Jade. It doesn't feel like there's any other way to package Jade other than this, you know, unstoppable woman who's just killing it. Like, that's why I thought that they would have still been tag team champions. I was expecting so much more to happen with them as champs because it really felt like that's what they were setting them up as. So I was surprised by that. Now, the other thing that I'm very happy is that we saw Naomi qualify for the Women's Money in the Bank. So I have a video here on the channel where I went back and watched all of the Women's Money in the Bank matches from the Money in the Bank pay-per-views. And Naomi, to me, was the MVP in so many of those matches. Like, going back and watching it, she really was the special attraction in those matches because she was able to do things physically that none of the other girls could do, or nor did they try to do in those matches. And so Naomi qualifying made me happy because I'm like, oh, that's really fresh in my mind right now. So I was very happy to see her qualify in this.
So you're saying like Naomi is to Money in the Bank matches as Kofi Kingston once was to Royal Rumble matches?
I feel like, yeah, I do think Naomi has been the very best in performing in those matches. Yeah, because I think it was at least like 3 years where I chose her as my MVP for the match.
Well, that's a lot.
I didn't pick anybody else. So yeah,
more than anybody ever. That makes her the MVP of MIB.
MITB.
MITB, don't.
MVP of the MITB.
Did I say that right? MIT, it be me.
This is too much for me. I hate when people shorten words up like that because I'm just sitting there like, what is that? What does that mean? And it could be like my favorite thing ever. And I'll be like, what is that? DS? What is DS? I don't know what DS is. You know, all these stuff. And anyways, it happens all the time. I see it all over the internet. And I have like no idea what anything means. That's why I struggled with BL. I struggled with BL. Come on. Mm-hmm. Who struggles with BL? All right. we got to get into these final super chats here. This is from Jana, who says, can we get heel face bloodline on separate brands? I would say it'd be like Jay and Jimmy doing their thing. And then the heels doing their thing.
But then why are they, you know, we need them facing off. So yeah. I like that idea in a certain sense, but then can you build the same way, I guess would be my question.
Right. That's true. John Black says, Denise, ? SummerSlam 88, bad. Mega Powers versus Mega Bucks. That was magical for 7-year-old me. Emphasis on 7-year-old you.
Things change. Is that $1 million man in IRS? Is that-
things change. Like, things change. When you're watching something when you're a child and when you're an adult, it's totally different. Totally different. Trust me.
Who was the Megabucks? Oh, that was DiBiase and Andre the Giant, not DiBiase and IRS.
Yeah, no, not IRS. Yeah, yeah. So anyways, don't hate me. Don't hate me. Wait for the review. I explained myself there. We got Jana here who says, I think Jade Bianca will get a rematch for the tag titles. In my opinion, I don't think Jade is ready to be completely solo yet. Keep them together. Yeah, that's why I thought they were going to be. I thought they were still going to be together.
What if Jade's, though, big match is Bianca? Like, what if that's the match where we see how everything has been put? Like, I think you could have her go against Nia first in a different sort of match, you know, hitting the rails and the steps and all that sort of stuff.
If they do her in Indy, I don't have faith in that match. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't really either. But I'm wondering if maybe they're waiting to show the full polished product against Bianca. I mean, that is like, if we're waiting and we haven't seen it, the curiosity factor on top of the star power could make that electric.
Right. Jana, thank you so much for that super chat. I appreciate you sending that in. All righty. Well, there you go. That was literally Money in the Banks. It's been a long day, guys. It's been a long day. That was literally SmackDown for today. Robin, Do you have anything else you want to add? Anything you want to tell the people? What do you got going on?
You know, yeah, follow me on the YouTube channel, Twitter, everywhere else. The new website, the Women's Fast Break on SI that I got going on if you're into basketball. I'll be all over the place next week too. I'm on, I'm in for Mad Dog on Sirius XM Wednesday through Friday. And I'm on the morning show on Infinity Sports Network on Thursday and Friday as well. So all over the place.
You're busy. You're busy. We got Anthony Giuliano here who says, I'm ready for Survivor Series for Bloodline War Games. And then TNA versus WWE this year is epic. And we get Team Jade versus Team Bianca War Games. Oh, that would be cool. That would be really cool. I kind of like that. But I don't know if we're there yet. I don't know what's happening. I have no idea what's happening, especially for the women. I have no idea what the women's War Games match is looking like it's going to be right now. Anthony, thank you so much for the super chat. All right, guys, that is a wrap. Before I go, just a friendly reminder, if you guys haven't already, please head on over to Apple Podcasts. I'm showing it right now on the screen. Search up the podcast Instinct Culture by Denise Salcedo, and please click that follow button. If you guys enjoy the show, leave a nice review. It really helps out a whole lot. I'm trying to grow the audio version as well. So if some of the people that watch on the video side can go and give it some love, that would be really, really awesome. The links, of course, are in the description box, or if not, you can just search up Instincts Culture by Denise Salcedo. This weekend, I will be back on Sunday. It is Forbidden Door, so myself and Reg will be here to talk about that. And then next week, I start to drop the daily SummerSlam videos as well as Money in the Bank content. So there's going to be a lot happening here on the channel. Make sure you guys are subscribed and have a lovely weekend, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye, everyone.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.